Just a reminder, if you have questions for one or more of the panelists, to post them into the Zoom chat, and we'll address those at the end of the panels for about 30 minutes for a Q&A session. Our second reading comes from page 50 of the Big Book. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Again, that's chapter 4, We Agnostics, page 50. I would now like to introduce Mike L. from Louisville, Kentucky, to speak for 15 minutes.
Mike, alcoholic. Are we there? Okay. Dry date, September 7th, 1985, and to be here. I've gotten the good fortune to be able to see my friend Colleen twice in a week's time, and that is a special gift. It says also in the chat, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, and I was that kid. I came from a family that wasn't particularly religious, but I was attracted to the spirituality that I saw in both of my grandparents, and we had kind of a blended family. One was Baptists, and one were Catholics, and I would beg both of my grandmothers to take me to church with them, and I would love it. The service didn't matter. I believed. I loved it. It gave me great strength. And then as I grew a bit older, I had my first drink at 11, and I became a bit older, and it occurred to me that if I wanted to live this spiritual life, I was going to have to do some things I didn't think I wanted to do or could do, and I was definitely going to have to not do some things I was sure I wanted to do. And the way of it is, I'm not going to tell you that, hey, I can't pack the can't do this. So what I did is I made up a series of stories over time. They were mean to me. They scared me. They were this. They were that. They never, and they were all lies. And I came here with all of those lies packaged together. And the job I had in step two was essentially unpacking one of those. This is one of the where that set-aside prayer is so powerful, because there are no ideas almost that are as damaging to me as the old ideas I have about spiritual matters. They're the ones that really limit and hobble me. So I was talking with my mentor Don about this one time, and he says, well, looks like at the beginning God may have created you in his image, and you've been trying to return the favor ever since, because what I've done is created a God in my own image, a God that was just a Mike with superpowers. And that had brought me to a dead end here. So I had to find a place to get started. I was suggested to me that I do this in a very simple way. So I went started about it. What was the one thing that I needed from a higher power that I was going to have this intimate, open relationship with? And the first thing that came to me after consideration was God's not angry. I don't know about you, but I can't open myself up to angry people. I can deal with angry people, but it's usually I've got to harden myself up some. So for me to be really open, I had to believe as a start that God wasn't angry. And then the second pillar in this whole situation was simply God doesn't think comparatively. God loves me just as much when I'm standing in a liquor store writing a bad check to buy a bottle of whiskey to go seduce the neighbor's wife as he does when I'm at the Salvation Army trying to help a newcomer. Now, I get a different result and different consequences according to which one of those I'm doing. But that's not God punishing me. That's me just getting the consequences. If I step off the roof of a high building, that's not God punishing me when I hit the ground. It's gravity working. It's a natural consequence that flows. So God, and if I could make God love me or not love me, by if I was good, God will love me, and if I'm bad, God won't love me. See, I've just come around the barn into the back door, and I'm playing God too, because that's manipulating God, wouldn't it be? So that was really important. One of the real awakenings here at one point, I had a longtime sober priest in my old home group, and I went to Father Larry and said, you know, I told him what I was trying to do here and asked for his help. And he says, you know, Mike, I do a lot of pastoral counseling in this parish, and it's turned into a pretty rough place here. There's a lot of bad stuff going on. He says, but one thing I find when I get even the worst parents in here talking to me, if I press them, the worst of the parents will tell me they want their kids to be happy. So if the worst of these parents want that, they don't want them to be doctors, lawyers, all that kind of stuff. You just say, I want my kid to be happy. So if these worst of parents want their children to be happy, is it possible that God would want your happiness? And in fact, he said, maybe God, is it possible that God yourself? And so that became the third pillar. And then finally, he suggested, he says, Mike, is it possible? Because I'd shared some inventory and some experiences with him earlier. He says, is it possible that God knows what will make you happy more than you do yourself? See, the bottom line out of those inventories, then and now, is they're all attempts by Mike to make Mike happy. And he said to me at the time, he says, if God gives you another 40 years life, you really think you can do a better job than you've done so far? I mean, he says, it doesn't look like you've been dedicated to anything else in the world, no love, no anything else than you have been to your own happiness. And this is where it's brought you. So, yeah. So on that basis, I've got the beginning of a foundation for a relationship with a power greater than myself that I can start to build a relationship with him. And that's so vital because God doesn't really need me to believe in me except as a precursor to having a relationship. And so that's the whole thing. Colleen talked about it. We're fortunate to share a home group and as sponsees and fellow home group members that one of the things we'll talk about is what's our current agnosticism. A lot of us have been sober for a long time, but they say, you know, if we turned off the sound and watched the picture and watched you move through the world and on Google Earth, would you say, oh, there's a guy who's had a spiritual awakening? there's a guy who has a relationship with the power greater than themselves. So it's not all the Lord, Lord, I'm saying, and how many times I'm saying this prayer and that prayer and everything else. How am I showing up in the world? And it keeps it real and alive. The second step isn't something I did back in the beginner days, and now I'm on these advanced steps. It's live and active today, because every time I tell you a lie, it's flat out agnosticism, because I'm telling you that lie because I believe that if I tell you the truth, God won't take care of me, or I won't get what I need and want. And that's just flat out agnosticism. It's been an ongoing process to watch this all unwind over time, because I think it was 2006. I was at a funeral for a family member, and I was sitting in the pew waiting for the funeral service to start, and my younger sister was sitting next to me, and she's one of those disgusting people that went to one college and graduated 4 years and married one guy, and she's been working at the same place for the last 33 or 4 years. I mean, there's no excitement in the girl at all. But I'm sitting next to her, and we're hearing the music start, and I turned to her and I said, "Carol, do you remember when mom had put us on that bus and we'd go off to that summer Bible camp, and there was that crazy preacher out there that was slamming the Bible and telling us we were going to burn in hell and all that kind of stuff?" And I noticed she's looking at me strangely. So I go, "What?" And she says, "Well, Mike, I remember going, but I just remember they told us Jesus loved us." So we rode the same bus to the same place and heard the same guy, and she heard Jesus loved her, and I heard I was going to burn in hell and all kinds of other things. Whose experience are you going to trust here? Whose was more value? It was another piece of an old idea that I'd come up with. Now, the third step, I know you wouldn't have done it, but I like to work it because it seemed I got a lot for doing very little. I could say this fancily, prayer clicked my heels 3 times and I was 25% the way through the steps. And I came to the view and the experience that stuck with me on this has simply been the third step, as in saying the third step prayer. It's like me applying to university. If I sent in my application to Harvard may respond and say, "Mr. Lorenz, we've received your application, but we want to know a bit more about you before we admit you." The same thing. I've made a proffer, an offer to God that I'm willing to approach having a closer relationship. But God, with all his love, he says, "I want you to know yourself a little better before we step into this. And I'll be with you as you discover more about yourself." And so the fourth step that leads into here from this third step that I've committed to do is not providing you with information that I'm going to use to fix myself. It's designed to crush me and convince me that there is, no matter how good my intentions, no matter how powerful my prayers and desires may be, that Mike will never fix Mike. And so this spiritual connect we're building over the next few steps and have already started is based on Mike not running the show here. So, thank you very much for allowing me to join in this wonderful celebration with you and see some old friends. And thank God I'm not God.
Thank you, Mike.